All right, hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Fine, how are you?
Very well, thanks. So I'm here with Paula Borges from São Paulo, Brazil. Paula's been a feminist activist for a long time and has actually direct experience dealing with fascist infiltration since 2012. She currently works as a translator. So hello, Paula.
Hi.
All right, so this is just a pilot episode for the Center for the Analysis of the Radical Rights Area Studies group. And so we're just going to begin with a discussion about Brazil, little fascist grouplets therein, as well as their relationship to the broader radical right. So to start with, can you just explain some of your encounters with fascist infiltration beginning in 2012?
Sure. We were involved around that time. Brazil had a huge feminist movement that was growing, and that was around the time that somebody known as Sarah Winter came in, and she was part of the Ukrainian group called Femen. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. We quickly found out that Sarah was had a past with white supremacist groups and had been trying to infiltrate feminist and left-wing groups. As soon as we found that out and that was dealt with, the situation got worse. For instance, at the moment now she's very involved with Bolsonaro's government, and she runs a militia of 300 or 350 people with guns that are planning to kill, according to them, planning to kill Congress people and judges and whatnot. So that's just one example of how they've been operating.
Jeez. So, I mean, this is like, it seems like something that's growing around the world that even in the United States or whatever, that people are building these militias, but it seems particularly acute of a phenomenon in Brazil. Yeah, I mean, that's just was one thing. Like, can you describe that phenomenon? Somebody just kind of comes up as a feminist activist, supposedly, and then ends up running a militia.
This is the first time this has happened to somebody who's a celebrity. And the strange thing is that you're not allowed to have weapons in Brazil, but they do have them anyway. I'm not entirely sure how the process happened, but we've been seeing that happening with in other groups as well. We have a party. The PDT was supposed to be some kind of center-left party, but it's now been taken over by groups of people who are aligned with fascist ideals as well. So it seems that it's a worldwide phenomenon, and they're using the same tactics everywhere.
So, just returning real quick to Sarah Winter before getting into the
Yeah.
PDT, how did she get involved in the Bolsonaro administration?
Yeah, that was after she was kicked out of feminism, let's put it that way. Then she turned against feminism and wrote books about it, accusing feminists of all sorts of things. And she started moving towards the right. And she, her group, and people who follow her were campaigners for him. This was before he was even a candidate. Some of his groups, like the men's rights activists, were involved in creating the idea of him running in the first place before there was even an idea. And then later on, she became very close to his children, and she had a job in his government, actually. I think that's no longer the case, but under the far right evangelical Damares in the Ministry of Human Rights.
Wow, so So she ended up getting kind of kicked out of the administration and then went into militia leading?
Yeah. And one of the strangest things is the wording that she uses. She often refers to transform Brazil into Ukraine.
Huh. So...
which is curious, since she was actually trained in Ukraine years ago.
Exactly. And so by that, she is taking the side of the Maidan protesters or the sort of separatists?
That is not clear.
So-called separatists.
That is not clear. I mean, she was trained as a feminist, supposedly, presuming that was a feminist group, which is not clear. But the wording is interesting because she's suggesting something that Bolsonaro has been suggesting himself, which is some sort of civil war.
Right. And can you get into a little bit the kind of growing paramilitary sort of support for a civil war in Brazil?
It is very unclear for us now if the military would support something like that. We know that certain wings of it would, and certain wings of it wouldn't. But the thing about Bolsonaro is that he has the support of the police militias, which are military. The police in Brazil is military. And that could be even worse than the army itself. But we also know that a lot of his government, most of them are military. And many have been joining groups like hers, because her group is one among many that intend to get younger people involved in this. I think that's the brand, to get younger people involved in it.
Right. That checks with some of the stuff. Yeah. What are some of the strategies that they're using to try and, you know, bring in the youth?
So far has been mostly online. I think from what we've noticed, it was mostly to do with infiltrating groups that talked about men's rights, and they were quickly turned into fascist groups.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of targeting advertising and groups and things like that. That kind of worked well with the older generation. And it's hard to say what exactly they're doing to recruit younger people and how that is happening. But it's obvious that part of the left has becoming more radicalized. And there was this phenomenon during the elections that part of the left, is something that we've seen in other countries as well, was claiming that we should allow Bolsonaro to win because there would be a massive shift in politics or something like that. So they were actually defending him, and some of them still are, while claiming to be in the left.
Right. You were talking about the PDT a bit. I think that they started out more of a left-wing party have been the subject of some entryism or infiltration from fascist groups. Can you describe that a little bit more?
We can't say the party itself has something to do with it. This is the party of the third runner, Ciro Gomes. But it was clear that there was a strategy to get the people who were involved in this radical group, such as Nova Resistência, to join this party. And this was a party that at the time was very worried, very preoccupied in not allowing the Workers' Party to win. But they certainly chose that party as a host, if you can put it that way.
And so you talk about this group is called Nova Resistência. Can you talk about a little bit more about their specific politics?
Well, they claim to be aligned with Eurasianism, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, that's it.
And this whole like fourth position. And this fourth position has, they have an institution in Brazil. I'm not sure how, who finances it, but they do have an institution for those studies, to put it that way. And you, one could say that since all of these people have been to meetings and events at this institution, that there's certainly a connection there.
Do you mean the PDT has people who come to these meetings of the sort of fourth?
Yeah. But so far, we couldn't find any older members or higher ranking members involved in this. It was mostly like an infiltration of younger people who joined the party recently.
Right. And so when you talk about fourth political theory, you're talking about the sort of ideology, sort of dressed up fascism from Alexander Dugin, the Russian fascist theorist, correct?
Yeah, and there's a he has a particular interest in Brazil to the point that he speaks Portuguese, and he has been speaking in universities there many times. And this includes the debate that he had with Bolsonaro's guru, Olavo de Carvalho. I'm not sure if you've heard of him.
I have.
I know he lives in... Yeah. So there is this debate in which the funny part is that they didn't really disagree with much.
Right.
But and this idea is aligned with the ideas of integralists. So these two groups have been aligning and creating what they call the new integralism.
I see. And could you, for, you know, listeners who don't know that much about the history of Brazilian politics, just kind of describe the integralists, like what basically, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they were, I'm not an expert, but they were a Brazilian response to like Italian fascism.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the idea was obviously a nationalist outlook.
Mm-hmm.
They claimed to reject racism, but at the same time, they proposed some sort of racial order and hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
if you could put it that way. And for the most part, they're very typically fascist. And they talk about, they do have... they talk about being anti-imperialists,
mm-hmm.
while at the same time, part of their ideology is to keep the country in a very rural state, underdeveloped,
mm-hmm.
and obviously run by religion. That's one part, that's the core of, that unites them all, including the new ones, even though they claim to reject some of the aspects of the older ones. But it's all about having religion running the center idea of the politics there, which again is what Bolsonaro does.
And yes, and also, if you'll excuse my terrible pronunciation, Carvalho, is that his name?
Sorry. Araújo?
Yeah.
Oh, Olavo de Carvalho, yes, yes.
Yeah, so he...
There is that.
Yeah, and so going back to that supposed debate that he had with Dugin, and Dugin does this all over the place where he, you know, has this important debate with somebody who's actually politically aligned with him, and then everybody pats each other on the back and says, wow, you know, the ideological diversity and the fact that we're so daring in our political thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, Bolsonaro's guru, he's a traditionalist, and we're seeing this fusion with his thought and Dugin's thought, the return of the integralistas. So can you, like, describe this kind of, like, traditionalist sort of, like, spiritualism?
Well, they're very confusing in how they approach these things, because there are many factors that drag people into these groups. One of them, and I think in Brazil that's obviously the main one, is misogyny and homophobia.
Yeah.
when they talk about, you know, the slogans they use about family and a good citizen and a good man, it's all about that sort of family ideal and rejecting all the changes that have been happening both legally and culturally in the country for the past 30 years in terms of women's rights and gay rights and all that. So I think that's probably the main aspect of it. I wouldn't say that a lot of them get into the intellectual part of it much deeper, but this whole traditionalist thing about rejecting internationalism or multiculturalism, creating an art, that's one core of the integralist idea, is to artificially create a national identity. And they still push that.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of something that you know happens within that sort of core of fascism, this idea of like the assemblage, you know, this like organic spiritual fusion of all of these different qualities and this like big, you know, new idea of the nation to which everybody is beholden, but under some kind of vague sort of spiritual purity or something like that, which is like reinforced and I guess sort of reborn through extreme violence. And it's fascinating to me to see these kinds of weird syncretic cults, really, like Dugin and, you know, the belief in the Kali Yuga, the formation of this kind of bizarre sort of spiritual intoxication based on all of these different faiths, motivated towards violence against people who are less powerful, is really the kind of like the movement. But I guess like it fascinates me also in terms of like the urban and rural, like where are the integralistas based mostly?
They're mostly urban kids of middle to upper class, upper middle class.
Right. So, you know, you have like a lot of support for Bolsonaro in like the like Amazon regions of the western Brazil, as well as the south. And it seems like there's like this interesting kind of alliance between these sort of like intellectualized right wing, you know, vanguardists and the more kind of like, I guess maybe are they small property holders who want to relax environmental restrictions in the Amazon?
Yes, definitely. In that case, I suppose there is that. And then there's the propaganda and the whole social homophobia and family thing. That was the biggest one of the most important things during the elections were the amount of fake news that people were getting through WhatsApp and Facebook and different platforms, and a lot of them were totally, they have a sexual content in all of them. It's all about how the Workers' Party is going to transform your children into gay children and force them to do this and that. And in those more rural populations, I suppose that was a very big deal because religion has a strong hold still in those areas.
Right.
But as for these kids, I think, as you said, it's not as clear what's happening in urban areas. So it makes sense that they would make that the area in which they want to transform it, they want to turn it into to their way. And then, as you know, it just ended up with even a terrorist attack. It's not the first one, but this is the first one that they actually claim.
So can you get into that a little bit more? I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about.
We were discussing about the television program that
went
on Netflix.
Yeah, get, like so this is the Integralista leader, Fauzi, correct? Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. Like, what it was the source of this attack, and what were the reactions to it?
There is this group, they've been a comedy group on television for many years now, and they did a TV special for Christmas for Netflix that involved the storyline, I think, I haven't seen it, that Jesus was gay and, you know, his father was a rapist. And obviously, they wouldn't like it. But then there was an attempt to bomb the building where the office is located, which was this guy, Fauzi, is involved with the new integralist movement, claimed authorship after he had fled to Russia.
Right.
Where he is. But, yeah, so there's an interesting thing there because somebody's definitely financing these groups.
Right, so Fauzi was part of he led a group in attacking a theater where this comedy group was performing what they thought was a sort of
this was their office. They weren't there at the time, but there were people there. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but they could have been.
And so go ahead.
Sorry. While they claim that this has nothing to do, the group, the official groups claim they had nothing to do with it, obviously, that he did it by himself, there is no evidence that he actually did not do it by himself because he was the only one who was identified. So there clearly was some planning behind it.
Uh-huh. And so in order to, and so charges were pressed against him in Brazil, and he fled?
Yeah, the day that the charges were to be pressed, he fled. So I guess the press was reporting that he had an inside information with the police. And he fled to Russia a few hours before they came to his house to arrest him.
Why do you think he fled to Russia specifically?
He has a Russian girlfriend and a Russian child.
Uh-huh.
But according to his Twitter, he claims that he goes there because he's friends with Alexander Dugin and they would give him asylum.
Right. So this is...
And he,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I'm not sure if he's a friend, but there are photos of them together.
Right. So there's a, the group, the base here in the United States is kind of like falling apart, but this is another interesting sort of thing that the leader of the base has turned up in, I think it's St. Petersburg, Russia. He has a Russian wife and kids as well. And so it's very interesting that, you know, these guys keep winding up there.
And there are a lot of Russian wives and kids.
Right. So there's another interesting kind of thing about Fauzi, like, this sort of speculation about his career as a dancer. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, he is a dancer of some specific dance, and there were some events held for this dance, and one of the people that was interviewed by the police after the attack, some woman who knew him, claimed, but she couldn't prove, that these events were being used to groom and kidnap women to go and work in Russia and Eastern Europe.
Right.
With the pretext of dancing in an event abroad in which there would be human trafficking. And according to her, again, she couldn't prove it, but this was reported in the press, they would be financing some of their activities like this.
Uh-huh. The integralists would be...
Yeah.
I see.
That's all she knew. That's what she claims anyway.
And what was it, didn't the police find some, like, wads of cash and guns in Fauzi's house when they tried to track him down?
Yeah, they found guns and some interesting reading material, obviously Alexander Dugin's books, and a lot of money in euros, cash, you know, reais, a lot of money. And oddly enough, if I'm not incorrect, something to do with ISIS.
So he's kind of like very interested in ISIS as a sort of like fundamentalist imperial organization.
You could say that. And it wouldn't be the first time because there was a mass shooting in Rio once that was organized by men's rights activists. And the man who carried it out had been recently converted and reading that sort of material as well. So I suppose in their minds, this intersect. It's not too dissimilar in terms of a traditionalist thinking, is it?
Oh, no, actually, it's very interesting where the crossovers are.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned, like, the integralists and the New Resistance organization that's been infiltrating left-wing party PDT in Brazil are kind of fusing together, and they also use a lot of the same rhetoric, including anti-imperialism.
Yeah.
It seems to me like ISIS is a pretty good example of a similar kind of thing. I remember there's an interview that with some of the ISIS brides, and they were using kind of very like anti-American, anti-capitalist, and to an extent anti-imperialist sort of claims in order to support their political position with ISIS in a way, which itself has kind of imperial claims, right? It's like this grand caliphate territory that they're going to conquer. And I think that speaks to Dugin's, efforts with Greater Russia, and it also speaks to maybe to the Brazilian fascist claims of the construction of a kind of a grand new empire that is paradoxically anti-imperialist, maybe because it's against foreign intervention on what it considers its own territorial right.
What's interesting about them is that they're not against foreign intervention. They're pro-US intervention.
The integralists.
That's pretty much all the Brazilian right. So they see themselves in some way as an extension of the US, if you put it that way.
Right.
And they want to follow the same rules. So they want the same laws on guns, for instance. They want the same sort of economic model. They want to destroy the National Health Service. You know, in every purpose in that way, they're aligned with the US. So I think when they make claims of being anti-imperialist, I think they're talking about, it's kind of like a made up thing, because they're not anti-imperialist. They are pretty much pro selling everything.
Right.
But it's about the traditionalists, I think. In their mind, it's about remaining an underdeveloped country, one that places tradition at the center of everything. And this tradition, obviously, is like a class sort of tradition too. But it's very, you could say, submissive in a way, their ideology. And it's interesting because other countries have this kind of idea of a national identity, but Brazil really doesn't. This is a very diverse country, and it's kind of it doesn't have this unity, this national identity, which is one interesting reason why they chose the football top to as their symbol. As in, the football is the only thing that unifies people in this country all over.
Right.
But I find it interesting because when they talk about this national identity, they openly say that they would have to create one. They would have to make one up.
Right.
And in some way, it is... you could say... Not sure if you would agree with that, but you could say this kind of ideology in Brazil is very Eurocentric anyway, because these people consider themselves European and they align themselves with this sort of white supremacist ideas, and they sort of reject anything that makes Brazil Brazilian.
Right.
So it's a different form of looking at it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to me. I know, like, some people, like my friend Shane Burley has, in his definition of fascism, he says that essentialized identity is actually at the core of what fascism, you know, brings forward. And it sounds like that's kind of like where you're going with this as well, in terms of the behavior of the Brazilian far right and their kind of demand to in a way like hijack Brazilian identity and steer it away from the I think it's the majority of people in Brazil at this point, just a little bit over 50%. Who are not white, or at least who are black, or who claim to be black or brown on the census.
Yeah, except that in Brazil, there's much more about how you identify yourself than anything else. So, they would like to identify themselves as white. Some of them are. It seems very important to them. I think that's... Personally, as somebody who's been living in Europe, that's what differentiates it, because fascism in Europe is about a sense of superiority, mm-hmm. in a way, a sense of entitlement. They mm-hmm. feel entitled and superior for being European, mm-hmm. whereas fascism in Brazil is an idea of inferiority. We're inferior because we are mixed.
Mm.
So, in a way, it's kind of... It's a difficult sell for them in a way, I suppose. So I guess they never get as big as you think they would, but then Bolsonaro happened, and who knows what's going to happen now.
Well, it seems like this is also maybe a connection between Bolsonaro's ideology and Trump's supporters, mm-hmm. because, you know, obviously he's constantly calling on, you know, the need to make America great again, right? And sort of say he rose to power through dissatisfaction and resentment against liberalism and the claim that the United States had lost its greatness. And it seems to me like it's a similar sort of thing, that a kind of a self-hatred that underlies this fascist desire to reclaim a country. But as you say, like this, the Brazilian fascist appreciation for the United States seems to place it in a subservient role. Is this the same for someone like Obama as president as it is when you have somebody like Trump, or would there be a different relationship between Brazil and the United States if we had a different kind of president in the United States?
I had never seen the Brazilian right wrap themselves in the United States flag until recently.
Yeah.
So I think there is a difference, yeah. And for all the people in Brazil that are against Bolsonaro, they call him Trump's dog. That's one of the nicknames he has, so it's pretty obvious.
Yeah. So I guess that might kind of, I'm trying to think of some more kind of questions here. Is there anything else you want to add in the conversation at this point?
Yeah, I think one thing is important to analyze is that Bolsonaro's election was a fraud.
Okay.
It wasn't really an election. So I guess it's one thing that makes it different. I mean, there was the fraud of the Dilma Rousseff's impeachment, and there was the obvious fact that they jailed the person who would win the election and then made the judge who did that a minister.
Right.
Immediately afterwards. So that was obviously what caused it. So it's hard to say. I would not forget that 50-something million people voted for him, I guess.
Right.
But I suppose if you look at the data, you find the majority of the Brazilian population do not vote for him.
Oh, I see, because they spoiled their ballots or abstained and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is curious in a country where voting is mandatory.
Yeah.
That people chose to not do that. But one thing that one should remember as well is that the Brazilian population was getting threatened at the time. They were pretty much saying, like, either this is going to happen or, you know, something worse is going to happen. There was an implicit threat of a coup. And it was pretty obvious that it could happen if they didn't get their way. So I'm not sure if those people who didn't bring themselves to vote for her dad, maybe there are plenty of reasons to do that, but maybe that's one of them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thanks. That's a good way to kind of approach Bolsonaro's presidency, that, you know, he did. I mean, if you look at the data, you find that he won pretty handily in most of the country. But then when you step back and see all the spoiled ballots and the abstentions and also the context of, you know, the police and the military and so on, it is a lot more unsettling than kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that straightforward because people had voted for a president a few years before and they didn't take that well and they took her down. So the notion that we can actually choose our president had been vanished. And the notion that Lula would win, apparently at the time the polls would say, was 75%.
Right.
So then he got jailed and the previous president was removed for no reason. So in some way people knew that, you know, we don't get to choose our president anymore. And at the moment now they're discussing whether we are going to have elections again. That seems unlikely because Bolsonaro is threatening the country again.
Right, the sort of civil war type of claims.
He keeps claiming that if somebody tries to remove it, he's going to do something radical.
Yeah.
And by that, he openly says, using the military against people. He often talks about killing left-wing people. So, I don't know. I think at the moment, the Brazilian left is paralyzed because they're terrified.
Yeah. How important do you think having Trump in the White House is to Bolsonaro's ability to threaten Brazilian democracy in this way?
I think it's everything. I don't think you'd be able to do that if it didn't have a backing. And I think if Trump goes away, then he goes away. That's something that most people think that's certain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, there is the history of U.S. supported military dictatorships in Latin America, you know, from the 60s, you know, I mean, before then, but really, I think the wasn't the Brazilian military dictatorship instated in the 1960s?
64, yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of wrote the book for, you know, Latin American geopolitics as inspired by the Nazi geopoliticians. I think Pinochet looked up to, what is his name, Golbery? Yeah. As a geographer first, and a military geographer at that. And what you're saying about the development of a Brazilian identity, you know, linking together the different regions of Brazil, and fusing together the different religions, you know, I think that that is a significant part of this kind of broader, broader strategy that, incorporates the, destruction of the Amazon, and, you know, kind of just like, but I mean, the economic part is something that I have questions about, because, you know, the integralists and New Resistance claim to be more like national socialists, right? They want to redistribute wealth, or so they have claimed in the past. Do they abandon this when it comes to, you know, the federal politics of resource extraction and capitalism?
Yeah, I would say that that was never really true anyway. Because when they talk about fusing things, they really talk about imposing things, imposing Christianity, imposing their ideals. And I think all of the claims about wealth redistribution have always been, they still use that. And if you talk to somebody from the New Resistance nowadays and you question them, they will call you a liberal. And they claim to be revolutionary, but the core of it really is just to maintain the class order as it is. Even if they claim that they would redistribute something, but I think what they claim that they would redistribute is some idea of national pride. That's mostly it. Perhaps some land, because they're completely opposed all the policies from the workers' parties, from the previous administrations, actually redistributing some of it, or welfare state and that sort of thing. Right. They basically preach about the pure moral greatness of being poor, technically speaking. That it's almost as if they're trying to convey this idea that it is your destiny as a Brazilian to live this life of poverty and simplicity. There's nothing, there's not a lot of, they don't talk about economy a lot. Not that I've seen. I mean, they don't really have a plan for that. And I do think that maybe some of them have disagreements in terms of that.
Right. They probably talk about it all the time in their institution.
Yeah, I think some of them do have some plans about the economy and some don't. I mean, they come from different classes as well. So, you know this well, they tend to have so much internal infighting in terms of that. But that I've seen, they don't have a clear ideology in terms of economy. They haven't made anything clear. Basically, what they've been preoccupied lately is basically just attacking different sectors of the left.
Yeah. And it seems like the common thread here is that they all idolize Bolsonaro.
No, they don't all support him.
I see. Okay. So they do challenge his administration.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could you say that again, please?
So, in what ways do they challenge his administration?
Well, they claim he's not enough of an anti-imperialist. Ah. That's one thing. And they have different preferences for the people. They claim that he's not a change to the status quo of the national identity, and that is actually true. He's not. But also, I don't think they want to be associated with how crude and disgusting he can be. It's important for these groups to be able to recruit people who are not happy, who are not Bolsonaro supporters. I suppose that's part of it.
So, yeah, so they're like bringing over PDT people who are young and kind of impressionable. They don't want to, you know, have big posters of Bolsonaro all over the place.
Yeah. And obviously this whole idea of nationalism being sold as revolutionary is kind of hip. It's kind of like we are breaking away from the institutional left or the traditional left because they're too cowardly to approach the subjects like we do. And that's part of the propaganda. Or another part is that the institutional left does not respect the wishes of the working class to remain being homophobic, for instance.
Yeah.
They try to impose their views on gender onto us, and that sort of idea.
So it seems like they're like going back, you know, and trying to kind of find the most general theme in the interview that we've had so far. It seems to me that it all comes back to their attempts to use patriarchy as leverage and draw people from the left over to the right, using, you know, all of these tropes about, you know, national unity and, you know, formulating sort of liberalism as imperialism of the of the soul, right? So it's like the corruption of feminism and
identity politics, which is what they call it.
Right. Yeah. And so they'll intervene in like left-wing social movements and in social circles in order to call out liberals. But what they want to put into place is opposition to, you know, feminism and basically anything that is not sort of a patriarchal, homophobic, way of life. Or excuse me.
Yes. That's their claim that
that was right.
The left failed because of that.
Right. Which is funny.
In fact, they claim that the left can't win because of that.
Which is, you know, that's exactly the whole Mussolini thing, right? The Mussolini was on the left, and then after, you know, the Red 2 Years, he basically decided that the left, or was it the Red 2 Weeks? He decided that the left was too weak to actually seize power and had to go to war and learn violence and hierarchy in order to, you know, present this sort of macho new man that was needed in order to clear out the sort of liberal corruptions. So it's very similar there. I mean, it's the same.
Violence is a theme. When they talk about not wanting to do things in institutional ways, they're basically reinforcing this fantasy of having, like, bloodshed. And without bloodshed, they don't want any revolution, really. So that's part of the idea that they sell. And anyone who disagrees with that is then a liberal.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're conservative and you disagree, then hey, you're conservative. But if you disagree from the left, then you're a liberal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But they don't have they don't have a problem with conservatives for the most part, unless, you know, they're not conservative enough.
And I just wanted to add for, you know, our several listeners that New Resistance is a group tied to the Duganist network that first, I think, in name appeared actually in France in the 1980s with this exact sort of formula, and then emerged in the United States through this guy named James Perazzo, who took over the American front and tried to transform it into this group called the New Resistance. And one of his acolytes, Joaquin Flores, then took up the banner of New Resistance and moved to Belgrade, I believe, where he currently works for Duganist joints like the Institute or the Center for Syncretic Studies and Fort Russ. So New Resistance in Brazil is also, I'm pretty sure, an outcropping of those of that network, and they're trying to build new organizations in Europe as well. So that's, I just wanted to situate that for the purposes of some background.
And in Brazil, there's an interesting thing that happened, is that this group sort of revived some older far right groups like the neo-Nazi skinheads, who started to join them. Yeah, so they found a new home now.
I see. So New Resistance in Brazil is tied to neo-Nazi skinhead groups.
They started joining them, yes.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because usually their brand is sort of like more like the alt-right, you know? It's sort of like we're the identitarian, sort of like more sort of intellectual or, you know, dressed up versions of fascism. So, you know, their involvement with skinheads is a sort of significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that they found a new home, that these groups have been sort of dismantled, let's put it that way, in the 90s. And after that, they became really small and they had no institutional representation. So it's obviously they would gravitate towards something that gives them some sort of institutional representation, even though I think it's important to say they don't claim themselves to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting thing that has been happening, a lot of lawsuits or threats of lawsuits going around against any journalist or activist that tries to describe what's happening.
Right.
Which means there is, obviously there is some money involved, like you said.
Right. It seems like, you know, there's a, especially when you talk about the evangelicals, there's been funding streams that have been exposed through the World Congress of Families and the radical right in Europe. I think Forza Nuova was actually part of the latest World Congress of Families, and they're an old Italian third positionist Dugan. So, you know, part of Bolsonaro's, you know, rise was on the wings of this sort of like surprisingly non-Catholic support from the United States. And so I guess one of those other questions that's sort of lingering there is like the fate of evangelicals and the fate of Catholicism in Brazil. Are we seeing more of like a fusion kind of like big tent revivalist tendency here with Catholics and Protestants joining together? Or do you think this kind of like joint support of Bolsonaro might fall apart if the Catholics and the Protestants start squabbling once the Protestants get strong enough to actually challenge Catholic hegemony?
they are strong enough at the moment. In they are something like 20% of the population, and they keep growing. And it was definitely them. I don't think the Catholics, the majority of the population, but one thing that's important to say is that most of them are not practicing Catholics. But the evangelical segment has been, if you look at the numbers, it's 20% of the population, the people who voted for him, actually pretty similar. And they are his diehard fans, so they would defend him to the end. And the churches have been used as a way to advertise him. And they own TV channels, and they own part of the Congress. So, yeah, for as long as they're there, and they seem to be getting much more radical each day.
So I suppose it is just sort of like a, it's more of like a big tent at this point with these different religions finding, or at least congregations finding common ground in suppressing the left. Well, really anybody that's further left than Bolsonaro.
Yeah. There's a joke in Brazil at this moment that anyone who doesn't agree with Bolsonaro is a communist.
Ouch.
That's literally how they refer to things. So it's getting more radical, and these people, some of them, one of the main agendas that he has is to allow people, citizens, to buy weapons. And during this meeting that they leaked recently that he had with ministers, he talks openly about wanting to use that legislation to create some sort of militia to support him staying in power.
Yeah.
And the segment of the population that supports him the most are the evangelicals.
Right. I think that there's a connection, right, between, you know, the efforts to liberalize gun control laws and the rise of the far right, and particularly right-wing fundamentalist sort of, like, religious power.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I'm not surprised that Bolsonaro is engaging in that. But it does seem fascinating to me as well, because he does draw on some anti-imperialist rhetoric sometimes, like when there were the giant fires in the Amazon. And I think he was saying that Macron, was being imperialist. But I think that's fascinating in the way that Trump has sort of engaged a pseudo anti-imperialist axis with Russia and Brazil. So I don't know. I guess I'd just leave it there, but is there anything else that you think is interesting that we haven't really touched on in terms of the radical right in Brazil?
I think we've talked about pretty much everything. The point now is exactly what they're going to do and what would happen. Overall consensus is that they are too weak to do what they claim to do. But on the other hand, the institutions are no longer working. If you put it that way, several times that Bolsonaro has confessed to crimes and nothing has happened. I suppose something similar is happening in the US as well. But you have a solid history of your institutions, and ours are like 30 years old. So it's hard to say what would happen, and I think that kind of depends on what's going to happen in the US as well.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Paola, thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you for talking to me.
I appreciate you taking the time. I appreciate your work. And I think that this conversation brings a lot of clarity to the situation in all of its complexity.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
All right. Well, have a great, I think it's evening over there. But have a great evening.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Have a good evening. Bye.
All right. Take care.